Hey there, oh there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast where two men dry hump the thin line between genius and insanity. I'm Bennett the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, and today we're talking bots of the giant variety. Yes, the top 20 giant robots list has been released, and with that comes the usual barrage of comments and objections. Also, December is upon us, and we go into what the coming schedule is and what that means for you. But first, the pleasantries. Mark, how have you been?
No, I'm fine. I don't know, how good can you be with a flight to California, 3 days spent away from home, the furthest you've ever been from home?
Oh, God, don't go Camp Granada on me.
And, no, it was fun. It was interesting to see a place that I'd like to live someday. Not specifically where you live, because there's nothing there, but trees and mountains and fog.
I said to you many times while you were there, but I would, if it wasn't for the fact that I was born here, I would like to move here. Excuse me. If it weren't for the fact that I was born here, I would want to move here. Live here, rather. Because this is a great place to live. Property's pretty high, though, but at the very least, you're not for wanting scenery.
Or good food.
Mm-hmm. I was actually very proud of the fact that I was able to take you to good places for food.
Though we did have, for transparency's sake, we did have kind of a discussion like, oh, well, if you had to eat at one pizza place for the rest of your life, that's where you're going to be taking me. Because there was the pizza challenge, because you're so anti-New York pizza.
I am, okay? I just hate pizza that, you know, you bite into it, then all the cheese just slides right off. And it's not pizza if it could be mistaken for those little plastic flags that hang over public pools.
God. Just missing the point. So I went to Bennett's favorite pizza place, and although the pizza is good, it's very reminiscent of Chuck E. Cheese pizza. Which, I don't know, that's, for me that's good, for most people that's bad, because people tend to hate Chuck E. Cheese pizza, but I liked it. And the place was nice, because they had a Virtua Cop machine there, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, like, I grew up on Round Table Pizza. It's a kind of, it's a West Coast chain. I think it only goes out as east as far as Nevada, I think. If you live in a place that has Round Table Pizza that's further east than Nevada, be sure to leave a mean comment in the comments here, so that way you can teach me a lesson about my ignorance.
Somebody's bitter.
We'll get to that in good time. We've both been discussing it, but...
happy pills, just down the happy pills. So yeah, it was what, three and a half days?
It was about 3.5 days. You flew in on a pretty, I wouldn't call it a red eye, but it was, every time you're flying to the West Coast, you're always going to arrive in like around midnight, unless you're catching a morning flight. There's no, like, you're landing in San Francisco at 2 p.m. Nope, you're either flying into San Francisco at 9 a.m., or midnight.
And it was a uneventful flight, thank God. Mm-hmm. Longest I spent on a flight, which I kind of hate. Like, I love nonstop flights because there's less confusion, but I hate economy air travel because they don't have bucket seats.
Nope. I gotta tell you, the seats in first class, they're nice, but they're not worth the amount of money you have to pay to get there. Unless the flight is longer than 6 hours. Then, you know, the price could be a kidney and I would pay it.
My whole thing about economy air travel is that, like, I like my car because it has genuine bucket seats. I can drive for hours in my car. Like, I can drive for hours in any car that has legit bucket seats. But when I'm driving, say, my mom's car, or any luxury car, it's always like sitting on a couch. And I don't know if you've sat on a couch for a very long period of time, no matter how comfortable it is. There's this firmness to it where you don't, like, if it's a couch that you don't really sink into, your tailbone starts to hurt and your ass goes numb.
Yeah, the firm sofas, I like them because they give my back support, and I'm a heavyset dude. My back needs support, but I can't sit there for any longer than 2 hours, or else you start getting the creeping, tingling sensation. Like, it feels like your butt's getting pinched by the sofa.
Yeah, and as I was sitting there on the flight out to SFO, I'm sure that the two people sitting next to me thought I was crazy. As I'm, like, leaning against the window and just, like, in my... Because I'm trying to sleep through the flight because, you know, like, what the fuck is there to see on a six-hour flight? Like, I see clouds. Lots of clouds. And I'm just, like, just trying to find, you know, that one bit of my ass that hasn't been affected by this rock-hard fucking seat yet. Yeah. And
that's not the craziest thing I've ever seen people do on a flight. Everyone has their own flight stories. I believe I was on a flight from Chicago one year, and I was sitting next to, from across the aisle, an old Jewish grandma looking woman. I can't tell if she's Jewish, but she has that kind of air about them, you know, like the badly colored hair, the clothes that are way too young for you to be wearing, kind of old person. Like, she was in her 70s, but she was dressing like she, you know, just came back from yoga. Yeah, I know. And that's exactly what she was doing throughout the flight. She would get out of her seat, stand in the aisle, and just kind of do what I can only describe as lazy Pilates. Like, she would just use her armrest just to kind of, you know, stretch out her knee, then she would just kind of hang off the side like she was on the lip doing, you know, like she was skateboarding and she was about to brush the lip. And she could not, for the life of her, sit still. From, like, the moment where wheels left the aircraft and we were in the air, she got up from her seat, just started doing this kind of, oh, yeah, I got to do this every morning or else I immediately gain weight. I don't care if I'm in a cramped tuna can of a fucking airplane. I'm going to stretch. Ugh. The thing about her, she was such a tiny woman that even when she was trying to splay herself as far across the aisle as she possibly could, she didn't take up that much space. So, like, I was expecting her to, like, brush her ass cheeks into my face as she was trying to stretch her back out, but it was, I couldn't keep my eyes off of her. She was just trying to, she was contorting her body in a way that, one, I didn't think 70-year-old women could do, and two, she was putting her body in a way that I thought would at least make other people uncomfortable, but apparently, like, either everyone was insane about it, or I was in a flight completely with myopic idiots. So I was the only one who was noticing that she was just kind of like this genie in a bottle. I mean,
really, do you want to be the person that goes up to an old person and say, like, hey, grandma, you're really creepy right now? You're, like, totally grossing me out. I'm going to need an in-flight air sick bag. Could you please sit your geriatric ass down?
Would you please fucking take a chill pill, act like the rest of us, and conform?
Yeah, you don't want to be that person.
Well, I don't want to be that person, but can you blame me for wanting that?
Well, no, I mean, strange behavior on a plane is always strange. Like, you never want to see a dude hitting on some chick in the aisle. Like, doing that whole, like, one arm on the overhead thing, just leaning down. Like, hey, baby, where are you going? Oh, yeah, that's right, the same place I'm going. I'll see you when we land. You know, like, you hate to see that guy.
Oh, God. Or the guys who were trying to be cute with the stewardesses.
Yeah.
On the flight back from Eliza's wedding, back in October, excuse me for a moment. God damn it, which I had a hiccup. Anyway, I was on a flight back from Baltimore. And I had a first class ticket. And I don't want to be that guy who abuses the call button, even when I was in first class.
Mm.
But I was just, I drank a lot. Listen, I had a few too many whiskey sours, and I was just, I could not get enough water in me. So I just kept, like, pressing the button, like, oh, could you get some water, please? It's like, yeah. And I got three or four glasses of water. And apparently, I thought I was, you know, bothering her, but she was always very nice and very friendly. And I just let it all out. And I said to her, like, I'm sorry I keep calling for you. I just, and I was like, no, thank you. And she told me that Because I keep calling for her, she has an excuse not to serve this other dude who was in the front row seat in the first class, who basically called the call button just to have a little chat with her.
Ew.
I know.
That's ew.
I know.
Because I look at first class and was like, well, you know, it's the seats are nicer and they're cushier. But on, you know, like non-huge-ass planes, it's still like, oh, well, there's only two rows of seats instead of three and what the fuck ever. But so I endured this 6-hour straight flight to SFO, and then my life became a mall rats joke. Because even though my ass hurt and my tailbone hurt and I'd been off the plane for all of maybe 15 minutes, I got put into a very uncomfortable place.
The back of a Volkswagen Jetta.
Yep. I got put into a very uncomfortable place, the back of a Volkswagen, and it was an hour, which is fine, I guess. It just is what it is. But then we got to, we didn't seemingly decompress immediately. It was just like, oh well, you know, let's see what we can accomplish, sort of. Like, all right, let's get everything for tomorrow set up properly. And then we had our 3 days of being on our feet and filming Violence Jack.
Woo! Premiering this Saturday. Call your friends.
Call your friends. Call your neighbors. Tell everybody.
Tell everybody. Can you believe this shit?
It's, yeah, for those who didn't see the trailer, the stinger at the end of the Top 20 Giant Robots, we are, in fact, doing Violence Jack on this Saturday, hell or high water, nothing bad's going to happen, relatively speaking.
Nothing bad is going to happen, but everything will not be okay.
Yep, and we worked very hard on it, and we know that not everybody's going to be happy with it, so we'll just be very transparent about it right now, that this is going to be a polarizing fucking episode of Anime Abandon.
We went into Violence Jack wondering how the hell do we talk about an anime that you can't really show too much about, or you can't show why it sucks, or why it's so hateful, or why it's so infamous. And so we found a way to kind of do it, but I think that people have this idea of what it's going to be, and I think they're going to wind up a little disappointed. Now, disappointment, I expect. Anger, I fully expect. But every so often, if I've done my job right, and we've done our job right, rather, if we've done it right, we'll see, like, a comment in the comments. Maybe one out of every 10 is like, you know, we'll say something along the lines of, you know, this wasn't what I expected, but I enjoyed it nonetheless.
And at the end of the day, this is going to be a Band-Aid experience that we're just going to fucking tear it off really fast. We're going to get the ancillary content having to do with it out all in the same month, except for the Nuts and Bolts Part 2 of Violence Jack, which will happen in January. And after that, that's it. We're never talking about it again. We're never referencing it again. There will never be another, like, you know, like, news like, Violence Jack, that's never going to happen again.
It's never, it'll be like a quiet statement of, we acknowledge its existence.
Yeah.
But that's the last time we're ever going to do it. And we're never just, we're going to pretend it never happened.
Yep.
But if you have like those asshole friends, like, oh, what about Violence Jack? You can point them to that episode and say, that's why we don't talk about fucking Violence Jack.
Yep. So that is going to be the big blast doors of level 2 of Anime Abandoned, and level 3, I don't even know, like, we haven't really talked about what level 3 of Anime Abandoned is yet. Like, we have a schedule kind of banged out for, like, we have spots, like, we have Macross picked out, we've got a couple of really interesting things.
I was about to say Macross, I was like, no, that's the name of the month. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Your show, douchebag.
I know! It's like, wait a minute, before you make a fool out of yourself, remember, you're the one who came up with it. Like, oh yeah, you're right, I did come up with that.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, God, yeah, I'm an idiot. Macross, okay.
Oh yeah, Macross.
So, So we got our stuff from Marcross picked out, although Bill Rogers was here last night, just hanging out, and he actually brought up a really good point, which was that there's only so much of Marcross that we can do before we have to do something else. Because he goes, how many times do you think you're going to be able to do Marcross, really? And I went, you know, I don't know.
It's like, you know, you can only, it's a meta series, it's an important and huge meta series, but it's not like it's fucking Gundam.
Yeah, so.
Where there's, like, easily and readily available Gundam stories that we could cover, because very few of the Macross saga is available here in the States. One of it is Macross Plus. One of them is kind of Macross 2, sort of, not quite. And I guess if you want to stretch the definition of it, what was it, Clash of the Zoanoids? No, I'm sorry.
Oh, Clash of the Bionoids.
Clash of the Bionoids, which is basically an edited, dumbed-down version of Do You Remember Love.
Done in Australia.
I thought it was Hong Kong.
The way that I heard it was that it was dubbed in Australia. It was directly commissioned to be done cheaply in order to kind of safely break into an international market. So the cheapest dubbing you could get at the time, I guess, was Australia. To get Rick Hunter to say no worries, I guess. I don't know. So yeah, the question does kind of become, it's like, okay, well, we've got Marcross lined up for this for 2014, but are we going to do it in 2015? But in the meantime, we've got some weird experimental stuff that we're going to try and do. But for the most part, the schedule is kind of empty right now. We're sort of flying by the seat of our pants for the first, well, after Q1, we're flying by the seat of our pants. But for now, let's focus on what's here and now, which is the top 20 giant robots list asterisk of all time.
And all right, in the issue of transparency, Mark was so adamantly against having the Iron Giant put on the list, he did not groove to that movie.
Yeah, that's where this started. This whole thing, there was no giant robots episode on the schedule. We had Sage Reviews had just been officially shit canned, and we realized, like, oh, well, that means we can do 3 anime abandons a month. How nice. But we couldn't, but I didn't really feel like, oh, well, let's just throw something innocuous under the bus because, you know, it's like, what a waste of fucking time. But somewhere in the middle of trying to think of all this came this argument about the Iron Giant where we're talking about, like, oh, you know, like, great giant robots, and Bennett says, well, fucking Iron Giant, the Iron Giant's amazing. And my brain just shut down. Like, all civility in my brain went away, and I was like, what? Fuck you. Eat a dick. Why? Why do you even think that counts? You know? Not a gun. Like, fuck you. And it's because, like, it's not like I'm immune to whimsy or wonder, but Bennett's 2 years younger than me, so that movie hit at a time when I was already immune to fucking Bambi caliber bullshit, and I really didn't, I didn't find it life-changing to see this Superman E.T. movie that is skinned with the fucking Red Scare. So this argument kind of exploded into a lot of back and forth, like, well, what would you say? And meanwhile Bennett's just continuously going, like, the Iron Giant deserves to be on the list.
And you were so convinced that people would be up in arms about the Iron Giant, but not a fucking peep.
No, because you want to know why? Because it's vanilla. Because it's safe. Because who cares really about the Iron Giant? It's not like we said top 20 greatest giant robots and then said number 11, the brave little toaster. You know,
it's like, it's an inanimate object that can talk. Oh, fuck you. And it's big. I mean, compared to a flea, it's big. Well, fuck you. I love the brave little toaster.
I mean, you're comparing, like, all right, first off, the Brave Little Toaster is, one, not big, or else they would call it the Brave Big Toaster, and two, is not a robot, but how, and yet somehow, this completely irrelevant name drop makes sense to your mind?
Shut up. Look, the reason why nobody's complaining about the Iron Giant is because either they were suckered like you into Brad Pitt's E.T. Superman Bambi movie, or two, that they think, like I do, that it's vanilla and it's harmless and it's kind of stupid and who cares if it's there and it's not in the top 10. It's in the top 20. It's in the top, it's in the top of the top 20 in the first bracket. But it doesn't make it to the championship at all. So who cares? But this fight turned into the top 20 list, which I was adamant about putting Magus on, even though Bennett keeps nailing me about Magus. Like, why do you love Magus so much?
And I know why he loves Magus. And I know why he loves Magus so much. And I appreciate the cartoon, too. And I relented to the fact that, yes, it deserves to be in the top 10, but in the 10th spot. And I liked the cartoon, and I liked the robot specifically, because I liked the look of it. But I had a tough time really, you know, comparing it to, like it's basically an homage robot versus the OG bots. It's like, how can you possibly compare them? I mean, in terms of, like, weight and importance.
Because because when we were leveling this stuff, it kind of came down to, okay, what gives you the fizz? What's really fucking awesome? You know, and when you think about the Magus, all you can think of is about how awesome it is. And awesome in the contemporary sense of awesome, not awesome in the sense that it instills a sense of awe. Because the higher up you get in the list, that's when you start getting, you know, the awgasm. But so,
and Magus was, and I'll admit that Magus does give me the fizz more than the Iron Giant, but like the Iron Giant means more to me than Magus does.
See, the Iron Giant is to me the grunge music to Magus's like hair metal music, in the sense that like metal shows were about going and like, yes, we know your life sucks, but come out and have a good time, versus grunge where you go out to the show and my life sucks, I hate my parents, you know, like that's
Mark sings the classics as interpreted by your parents. Turn this crap down. What's with all the racket?
Oh my god. So, there's a big fight between BenTheSage.com and TigWithTig.com, where we knew there was going to be a fight. We knew that we weren't going to get absolutely everything fucking right. We confused where the Shine Spark came from. Yes, the Shine Spark comes from Ghetto Robo. Technically, it doesn't come from fucking Mazinger.
Go to guy robots, come on.
They all look stupid. So you could take.
I mean, that was the point we kept coming.
Shouldn't eat a dick.
That was the point we kept coming back to about the robots, the legacy robots, is that we wanted to give them respect, but why the fuck do they all have to look so goofy? Tetsujin 28, Mazinger Z, the most goofiest looking bots, are the most important bots in terms of historical legacy, but. Jesus Christ, why did it have to look so goddamn goofy?
Now, to cover this adequately, the reason why it is that we're covering this right now on the show is because here's the number one thing that we've been getting nailed to the wall for. And I quote, "Not every Gundam is labeled RX-78. I know that! I know that. I knew that when we wrote it. I knew that I spent no less than 18 hours on that montage. The RX-78 montage is my major contribution to the top 20 robots list. All 19 other montages were done by Bennett, and I just helped him assemble music and occasionally footage. But for the most part, while the other 19 are all Bennett, the number one is mine. Did I know that that not all Gundams are called the RX-78? Yes. The reason why I labeled it the RX-78 series, the reason why it is that the script keeps referring to the Gundam as the RX-78 is because all Gundams come from the RX-78. I know that the RX-78 is limited to a certain part of the goddamn calendar. I know that. But I didn't want to have this redundant sound of Gundam from Mobile Suit Gundam or the Gundam Legacy, because I just didn't think that sounded nearly as epic as the model number. I can't list 200 different fucking model numbers. And I decided that since the daddy of all you see is the RX-78 dash either one or two, whichever you decide to go with, either the fucking red, white, and blue or the black and white, I figured that the most respectful thing to do would be to say that all Gundams in their DNA are the RX-78. You don't have to agree with it. Just know that I know. But that's not even the problem, is it?
Nope. What it all boils down to is this really abhorrent behavior of fan policing. It's really the only word. It's trying to devalue someone's fandom for the fact that other people have invested more time and more brain space for this fandom than, let's say,
my tirade. Tirade was the invalidation of someone's fandom based on your personal time investment. Congratulations. You can cite to me every single fucking Gundam model number there's ever been, but in no way are you entitled to walk up and smack somebody who you feel knows less than you, unless, of course, it's like some life crisis that you're having, because that's the only justification for it, is that you realize, oh no, maybe I wasted all this time knowing this completely unnecessary bullshit, and now I need to punish other people who have done more productive things with their lives. And what is it I said? Like, oh, it's like going to a baseball game for you to go to a baseball game and look at a little 8-year-old like, oh, you like baseball? And then what did you say?
And I said, like, do you know what the infield does when there's a runner in second with less than two outs? What? You don't? Burn him to the stake on the pitcher's mound!
And you, like, drag him by his collar all the way down to the pitcher's mound, and you get a fucking microphone, and it's like, this kid doesn't know what to do in this situation. What should we do with him? Him.
Him. It's like, this little shit usurps the good name of ball! Can you dig it?
And maybe that's really the springboard to talk about how it is that, like, I can appreciate, you know, how much I know about certain subjects and how much Bennett knows about certain subjects. And I can most certainly respect that there are going to be people that know more than the both of us. But when you actively go out of your way to invalidate someone's fandom or to invalidate a person in general over your personal time commitment, that just makes you look like a douche. I mean, do you have any idea how fucking stupid you look when you are actually saying, I know more than you, clearly, and that makes you a retard and me the best? You know, you're fucking holding your fucking rifle of fandom above your head.
I can't really fathom, like, what a person has to go through. I mean, mentally speaking, when they're presented with misinformation about their fandom spoken by another fan. And I've had that happen to me. Like, I've heard people talk about a subject that I know about. They get something wrong, and I feel compelled to correct them because I'm kind of a stickler for, like, trying to correct misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that we should you know, why would we not take every advantage to make sure that everything is demonstrably correct? But I've never been so like, what? You didn't know? What? It's this. You didn't know that? It's like, why the fuck are you talking to me? It's like, Jesus fucking Christ. I mean, kneel before me and open your mouth. I got to take a dump. And that seems to be all you're good for.
And I know that anonymity gives people the biggest fucking balls since fucking Duke. But the thing is that, you know, we're all kind of like, first off, nobody fucking asked you to watch it in the first place. But, and second, the people who continuously keep coming back to the well and they're like, you didn't read the manga. You don't know what the RX-78 is really all about. You don't know what Gundam is. Fuck you. Why do you keep coming back if we're so inadequately equipped to talk about these subjects? I fucking know what it is. It's so that you can come into the comments and just go and, you know, like try and drag us by the collar and be like, they don't know this much, but I know. And you know what? That's fine if that's what you're going to do, because it's not like I'm going to actively stop you from doing that in what is ostensibly our comment section. Because I'm always talking about how the Tickwitick comments section is the fucking Wild West. But my thing is that, you know, the reason why it is that fan is a four-letter word to so many industry people, whether no matter what industry you're in, is because there is that guy. And there are so many of that guy that just want that their sunrise and their sunset is only this one thing. And they are not well-rounded people. They are not even interesting people. They are people who have absolutely immersed themselves in this one thing to the point where there is nothing else. And they become an authority, and through that authority, they become corrupt. And through that corruption, do they become fucking douchebags. So
it's the same kind of behavior that leads to, like, harassment of women in conventions.
Women in conventions, the community manager for Mighty No. 9, the woman who developed that that depression game that I just read about. This weird, really fucking hostile male chauvinism.
It's... All right, there's a distinct difference between the people that act this way to in real life versus the comments, because any little shit can post a mean comment to someone's work and say, like, you know what, you need to kill yourself because we need a new holiday so I can take off work. But versus, like, the kind of... I almost want to admire the amount of assholery on display towards, like, in real life, because not everyone has the... Not everyone is willing to face that kind of animosity that they're asking for by acting like this kind of asshole. They're still an asshole, but they're the kind of assholes that you say, well, you admire them because they,
like, at least they believe in it.
Identify it.
Like, they believe in it, and they're willing to take a punch in the face over their bullshit commentary. Meanwhile,
these little fucking shit weasels on the internet who think that, you know, COD LOL, you suck, one, will get anyone angry, or two, feel this compulsory need to throw these, like, rape threats and fucking, you know,
rape,
like,
threats, death threats of fucking violence. I will ruin your goddamn life. And it really is kind of ridiculous, but it doesn't fucking affect me. All I do is I just kind of sit here, read these comments and go, like, okay, well, yeah, you got me. Not all Gundams are named the RX-78. But is there no gray area in your life? I mean, can you not understand why it is that I decided to designate all Gundams as the RX-78, that the RX-78-2 was the daddy? Could you not possibly interpret what I meant by listing it as the RX-78 series? Okay, fine, if that's really the way that you want to feel about it. But you certainly aren't filled with very much Christmas cheer, are you? Fuck.
I learned a long time ago, when you're posting content online, that you have to be able to allow yourself the ability to be wrong. Otherwise, you cannot make room for improvement. I've never once thought that my opinions were 100% foolproof accurate, and how dare anyone dissent from my opinion, because it's mine and it is right. I have to allow myself the ability to keep an open mind and say, like, well, maybe I didn't consider this, or maybe I haven't thought about it in this certain way that's a little bit more illuminating. And there are people in the comments who have a dissenting opinion, but know how to word it in such a way that doesn't come off as standoffish, doesn't come off as insulting or threatening. And you have to, you know, allow those kind of comments to sink in and evolve you as a person. It's not that I haven't gotten, like, the fucking angry, bilious, really, like, oh, how fucking dare you, sir, slap in the face kind of comments. Because I have gotten those, but the way I've always dealt with them is that I pretend that they're from crazy people.
Or we get Lachlan to record them.
Or we get Lachlan to record that one. Oh, God, the comment. That was so beautiful. I've actually read some other comments on Tigwatig that kind of complained about it, saying that it was very mean-spirited.
Yeah, I saw those, and I was just like, are you serious? Are you genuinely serious right now? No, there were the comments that said, like the comment was really mean-spirited, and then there was the other comments that were like clearly you can't, like, you take this shit to heart. It's like, no, we don't take this shit to heart. It's that people who comment like that are trying to drag Bennett and subsequently me into the street, into the middle of the square, and burn us at the stake. So that is malicious. That is malicious commenting when they do something like that. So that one comment was so bilious, was so outraged.
And it's so funny that I immediately thought that, like, some person, like some escaped mental patient, decided to go to the public library, found this one video of mine, and then he just, like, there's electric weasels in my shorts! As he sent this oddly very lucid email to me, or this comment, rather.
So that became, okay, this is hilarious. Let's make a video out of this.
Yeah.
But normally we just kind of let that stuff pass us by. And, you know, like, I only get directly involved whenever it is that when somebody's being, like, ridiculous in our comment section. But otherwise, you know, there's nothing that we can do about Tigwatig, which is why it is specifically that I say things like, well, for the suggestions for the next Nuts and Bolts, we're only reading BenTheSage.com comments. Because, really, the community at BenTheSage.com is a community that I can trust. You know, like, that's like you guys that hang out here, that go so far as to be like, well, you know, that went so far to say, oh, Bennett has a new website. That's really interesting. Oh, look, there's a comment section. Let me hang out here, see what happens. You know, the community here isn't that large. And since it's not that large, I see a lot of the same names and I know who's accountable for what type of commenting. And the reward for that, for everybody kind of, you know, keeping it classy and keeping it civil around these parts is, well, hey, you guys get to dictate exactly what the next commentary is going to be. I mean, it's not going to be 100% of the time. Like, I posted in the schedule that the next one's Angel Cop. The reason why the next Nuts and Bolts is Angel Cop is because by uproarious applause, everybody commented the next thing they wanted to see was Angel Cop. So congratulations. You all directly had a hand in the next episode of Nuts and Bolts. But I would never entertain anything that goes on at Tigwatig, because Bennett once said that there's, you know, like, when you cast a wider net, you tend to bring in more chaff. And God damn it, it's right. That is such a rightful statement. And it's not like I don't read the comments at Channel Awesome. It's that there are just way too many people who either can't afford cameras, can't afford microphones, aren't creative enough to make their own show, that decide that the best thing that they can do is, if you cannot create, critique. And when they get to critique, they could take responsibility in critiquing and try and be constructive, but instead all they do is comment on Bennett's weight and how the RX-78 isn't the only Gundam and we don't know anything and Anime Abandon's only about dubs and we don't read the manga. And my position on people like that is, you know what? If you have such a problem with it, do it better. If you can't do it better, then critique better. If you can't critique better, kill yourself. That's it. Just fucking put your toe in a shotgun and tap dance. Because I don't know what you're fucking doing, Walmart, but
But we're not bitter.
But we're trying to put on a show. We're trying to entertain people. And we're putting it on, you know, relative, like, I mean, like, we're not getting directly paid. We're getting paid by way of ad revenue, but there is no sponsor of Anime Abandoned. There's no sponsor of Super Tool Shed. So we're doing it, and everybody in new media is doing it because, you know, first and foremost, they love to entertain and they took a chance. Some people quit their jobs in order to be this kind of entertainer, even though new media is still massively fucking unproven and is as turbulent as any sea still, you know, sea fucking Vargas / YouTube. But
that was another discussion entirely between the both of us about that situation. But I kind of want to put a cap on this fan backlash with the statement of, it's not that I want to surround myself with sycophants because I learned nothing by doing that. I accept all comments that are thrown my way, but the needlessly hateful ones. And even if you think that you're in the wrong, even if you typed those comments out and you think you're in the wrong by like getting banned or getting a citation or however the website that you're commenting on is responding towards your comment, there has to be a part of you that realized that maybe, just maybe, you were a little overboard in there and you're crazy just kind of came out there for a moment. Just a little bit.
Yup.
It's also kind of therapeutic to go through some of those comments and just imagine what like that person was wearing at the time he typed it. Was it normal human clothes or was it like a Gladwear bag?
Yeah, was he in a hefty bag with a fucking tinfoil hat?
Tinfoil hats like, when in my day, we used to dance with our pants on our head if we wanted to talk to the girlies.
Yep. So if anybody wanted to know what our personal position is on the content ID system, if only to turn it back on to being new media entertainers in the first place and be like, okay, look, we whip the claws out on bad commenters. Let's whip the claws inward on new media. My personal opinion is that I think that a lot of people are getting wronged right now. But the thing is that you can't really fault the landlord for sending in an exterminator if you're a dirty bastard.
It's punishing everyone who are innocent because of the undesirables on YouTube. But the problem that we kept going over was the fact that how can you institute a system on YouTube where you can get rid of all the people that are uploading pirated, well, it turns out to be gameplay, which that in and of itself is a gray area to me because I've never seen somebody who didn't buy the game because like, oh, I could just watch it on YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like a movie.
No, and most publishers aren't like, I mean, for people who are doing like Let's Plays and like we're playing through the entire game. Like, all right, well, that's not really that great for a publisher because then there really could be someone who just says, like, well, you could experience the game like a movie. I don't need to play it. But people who are doing just, like, simple game reviews, you know, 10 or 20 minutes long, they don't really deserve to get hit with the hose. To which I was talking to somebody about it where they were like, it's not fair. It's like there's a select few people that are doing this and everybody's getting punished. And, you know, like nobody does that. And I'm like, look, man, there's a peaceful protest full of 2,000 people. One guy throws a bottle at the fucking riot at the fucking SWAT team. And then guess what? Everybody gets the hose. Like, that's just the way it fucking works. And YouTube is generating 24 hours of content every 60 seconds. There was never a solution that was going to involve the human touch for very long. That was just never the long-term solution. Do I think that Angry Joe should have gotten fucking just sacked with 80 some odd complaints? No. Do I think that this system should be nearly as blind as it is? No. Do I think the system's half-baked? Yes. Do I think the system is necessary? Yes.
It's sort of like that. I hate to compare it to something as very troublesome as like the prison system, but prisons don't stop crime. But could we have civilization without them?
And the long and the short is no. Because we need to be able to kind of slap people on the wrist. And every once in a while, you know, fucking justice is not served. The innocent person does get fucking thrown under the bus. And the thing is that it's not really new media people that get slapped with DMCA complaints. It's not them that's going to court. It's Google that has to go to the court. It's Google's legal team that has to deal with all this shit. Google and subsequently YouTube are providing a free service in which they are on the other hand cutting checks to people for providing content, which advertisers want to kind of jump in on, which is great. But new media entertainers also don't have to worry about bandwidth. They don't have to worry about any of the problems that YouTube has to worry about, and they just kind of magically get money for all of their hard work without having to worry about any of the logistics involved. So since the logistics are held entirely in the hands of Google, it's also their job to protect their own. It's their job to make sure that their legal team has nothing to do. And in order to make sure that their legal team has nothing to do, they implemented an automated system that's IDing stuff that's not supposed to be there. Unfortunately, that does mean that the system is stupid. The unfortunate result is that the system is stupid. And a lot of people got hurt. So I'm with New Media. You know, I've been in new media for more than 10 years now, as a podcaster, as now a video entertainer with Bennett, as a voice actor, and I'm with Joe. I'm behind new media in the sense that this is not the way. But at the same time, it seems like nobody is willing to get hurt over what they believe in. No one's willing to bleed over what they believe in.
It's all right. We have to realize that Google is not doing this to hurt you. I think we want to believe that megacorporations are an evil force, or that money is all that, you know, like that money was going to be the cause and effect for everything. Well, yeah, they're a business. They're a business to make money. It's how is this not registering with you? But additionally, like, if people were so pissed off about what YouTube and by extension Google is doing, then why the fuck do they keep using YouTube? It's not like it's a necessary service. It's not like you depend on YouTube for like to put a roof over your head or to feed you. Content providers depend on that, but the users don't. The users who complain about the commenting system, about having to use Google Plus, about, you know, all these DMCA notices. That, and they complain about it, but they keep using YouTube. So all Google has to do is just weather the storm for a few months, and then everything goes back to normal.
Like, the whole of new media could move to Blip right now, and YouTube would be hurt. Like they could move to Blip, they could move to Springboard, they can move to whatever the fuck the service is that Noah's using, and they would get better deals, they would get better percentages on revenue. And the reason why it is that everybody goes with YouTube is because YouTube is an ocean with no doors, no walls, no windows. It's just, you know, you jump into the ocean and there is this never-ending stream of fucking content. Meanwhile, Blip is a building. You know, Blip is literally a building. And, you know, like, the doors are something, like, the doors are open. Even though they did a mass fucking evacuation of, we don't need your fucking Sailor Moon commentary show.
So basically it's an open building, but there's a bouncer at the door checking everyone's ID before they could get in.
And they established single sign on, like, you don't even need a Blip account in order to comment. But the thing is that since YouTube was there first, everybody knows YouTube, and therefore that means that their community is ridiculously large, larger than any other video content host on the planet. And if you want to grow an audience, if you want to gain a notoriety, that means that at the start of it, you kind of need YouTube. But at what point do you say, I don't need YouTube anymore? I've got my 1,000,000 subscribers, or I've got my 5,000,000 subscribers. Yes, you need to be concerned with your bounce rate, because, of course, you know, in any mass exodus and any migration from one service to another, you're going to have a drop off of people who aren't going to be interested in having to do something as heinous as typing a different fucking URL into their browser.
Which, or just keeping a different bookmark.
Which is supposedly, you know, kind of solved by having your own website, where you encourage people not to go to YouTube, not to go to your account on YouTube or Blip or Springboard, but instead you encourage people to go to your website. So that way, if you do have any infrastructural changes in terms of who your video host is, well, that doesn't affect your audience base because they're just going to your website. Your infrastructure change is entirely on you to implement, and they don't notice a difference.
When you're done your job right, they don't notice a difference. I kind of want to steer this conversation back to this notion of YouTube has done a lot of things that have made their users angry. But they have done nothing about it. They have never reverted to, like, the old ways. I remember back, what was it, 2009, I want to say, where YouTube started, like, the featured video section. Where, excuse me for a moment. All right. Where they stopped doing what's trending now and then started putting these videos that, you know, have a large subscriber base behind them. Or it was, like, a promoted video from some advertising, you know, like they paid YouTube to promote that video and put it on like the feature video page. And I remember there was this user called Mr. Black's Movie Reviews. Ever heard of him?
Nope.
Well, there was this YouTube user who named himself Mr. Black's Movie Reviews. And he had very, very dry reviews. He would always talk like this, and then he'd end his sentences like this. It was that very cadence that was so monotone, and it was, he had good things to say about the movies that were coming out at the time, but goddamn, couldn't he just vary it up a bit? But that's beside the point. Well, he started posting these videos, you know, protesting about what YouTube was doing at the time, and especially that. And he used language like YouTube, you know, is becoming like Disney's buying out like space on YouTube for videos, when it was the user base that grew YouTube into what it is today. And he used words like, we've earned it. And that's just, I almost slammed my keyboard. I was like, motherfucker, you didn't earn anything. You took advantage of what a business has offered, and now you're getting, you know, your fucking panties in a wad, because all of a sudden, they decided that maybe getting some money from other companies to promote their videos while still allowing you the ability to post your videos, and all of a sudden, it's the worst thing that ever happened to you. And he took down his videos in protest of that, never came back.
Hmm.
And I just thinking, like, what did he have to gain by this stunt?
Yeah, like, lose a career, get a job. That's what that fucking boiled down to.
I mean, at the very least, he stood up for what he believed in. It was stupid. It was all for the stupidest reasons. But he suffered. Excuse me. But he suffered for having done that. And he's probably will never come back again. So, you know, like, at least he did something. It didn't work. But he personally made sacrifice.
And the lesson is that this isn't the end of people complaining about YouTube. And while I stand behind new media, I stand behind what would be, you know, our colleagues, our comrades in arms, there has to be a plan in terms of, you can't beat Google. Sorry. Can't happen. The only thing that you can do is take all of your, you know, all of your well-earned righteousness about what it is that new media did for YouTube as a brand, look at the next viable brand and migrate. That's it. Like, if YouTube didn't appreciate what it is that you did, okay, fine. Well, I'm sure Blip would. Springboard most certainly would, because they're not even third on the list.
I'll avoid talking explicitly about my brief relationship with Springboard, but it's not exactly very professional to talk about that, but I'll just say that there's a reason why people keep going to Blip. Blip isn't perfect, but there's easier to talk to people.
But they're number two on video hosting, and they're like in terms of just like professional content video hosting, they're number two, and they're definitely number one in terms of new media video hosting when you remove YouTube from the equation. So it's up to new media as a whole to have a plan and to migrate, you know, because Google's not going to stop. And your video complaining about YouTube, complaining about Google, complaining about the commenters that are not even pro or against new media, but are just against new media content generators in general, where it's like, you need to shut up and get a fucking real job. That is never going to stop. That's just the landscape there. So, because what was it that that Doug had in one of his videos? You know, like forget YouTube clause, go with Blip clause. And I always thought that was like a really telling thing. Like he was right. You know, like YouTube is not what it used to be, and it's never going to go back to that. And a policy of non-confrontation is not going to exist between new media and YouTube, because YouTube is going to change its policies based on a landscape that changes every single hour of the day.
Greener pastures and everything.
So that being said, it's just time for new media to move. It's time for Blip to get bigger, or Springboard to get bigger, or, you know, the next professional video service with ad revenue payouts to get bigger.
If the Maker Studios used Blip the way I would envision that they bought Blip for, to exclusively host their videos, we're talking about like the epic rap battles of history, the Philip DeFranco show, Epic Mealtime is on Revision 3. It's not a Maker Studios product. But if they use that, then they could start having... I wouldn't say they couldn't. I don't think Blip could ever match the YouTube audience, but it wouldn't be like Blip's audience is this small clusters and pockets connected only by website from website. It could be something that you could point to saying, yeah, there's this own little ecosystem here.
And right now it's still, I mean, collectively it is its own ecosystem. But the thing is that it's a limited and compartmentalized ecosystem. But there's always that trade-off, is that if Blip gets bigger, if Springboard gets bigger, it's going to get less personal. And you have to accept that as red. Like, you have to accept that on a long enough timeline that whatever video service you go with, whatever video service new media goes with as their new haven, whether it's Blip or Rev3 or whatever, they're going to get bigger, they're going to get less personal, they're going to care less about you, and they're most certainly not going to give a shit about the fact that you're the ones that built them. But you can't build your own institution either, because the same thing's going to happen. Every institution that grows to the millions, to, you know, the quarter billion, is going to get machinated. And in that machination comes the lack of a personal touch, which you feel is necessary in order to make sure that things like what happened with Content ID don't happen. Because again, if new media moves somewhere else, then the target's going to get moved by big business somewhere else.
Everyone thinks that there's a simple solution to this, to a very complex problem. And people, especially on the side of like fair use, are citing this law without really understanding it.
It's the buzzword, and it is the buzzword right now. Fair use is the big buzzword shield that everybody's fucking throwing around right now. It's like, well, I get fair use, and this gets fair use, and that gets fair use. It's like, okay, well, please tell me that you have a full and comprehensive understanding of fair use to the point where if you got called into court, you could defend yourself. Because if YouTube weren't there to keep the dogs off you, that's where you'd be.
There'd be none of you left. To quote fucking Charles Manson.
I think it's this.
If there was a coda of this entire podcast, I think it's just fan entitlement. when you get boiled down to it, the fucking policing in the comments that we talked about, this misguided attitude towards a very real problem facing Google and facing advertisers and facing its entire existence, let's face it, is that people are not getting the entire picture and getting wrapped up in themselves because they know no other way. It's this entitlement problem that...
And that's not to say that there aren't malicious forces out there that are trying to stop the growth of the internet as an entertainment industry. There are.
There are.
There are absolutely forces out there in dark fucking rooms that are trying to develop ways to stifle the growth of the internet as an entertainment industry. For the same reason that we don't have a big diesel, like a big diesel contingent in the United States of America, is the same reasons why it is that you can cite that new media goes through these growing pains every other year. So it's not to say that we're ignorant to that. It's to say that not everybody has the full picture. Not everybody is interested in listening to what the big picture looks like. And most certainly not everybody is interested in, you know, like, sometimes you can't fucking stand your ground. You have to set up shop a few yards behind, you know, behind the line, and no man's land gets a little bit fucking bigger. But then you mount your fucking counteroffensive. Like, that's war.
I mean, if we're going to liken this to fucking war all of a sudden, you can't look at this situation and think that there's a simple solution when there's so much money and so many people that are involved and lettering of the law that is very specific and very minute in detail. I mean, like, everyone, like, we got into this discussion about digital rights management and we were just got to the point of exasperation with each other, but it came down to it's a necessary evil. Well, I wouldn't say evil, but it's a necessary hindrance that can be problematic for a lot of people for not very good reasons. But it has to be there. Because if it weren't there, then nothing would get done. People will not get their money. Content holders will not be able to do their fucking job.
And that's the thing, is that, you know, like we all want, you know, freedom of information. We want the internet to remain net neutral. And we want all of these things. But there's just so much that we either don't understand, don't see, that's really just kind of keeping us spinning our wheels. But that's fine, because there are people more versed in it that are fighting that fight daily. But I think my final word on it right now is fuck it. Let's just talk about the rest of December.
Yeah, it's a big old clusterfuck, and I think that's for just going to make it better by not making it worse.
Yeah, the cover sheet is I support new media. That's it. Like, that's my official fucking statement, is that I'm pro new media, anti content ID. If anybody needs to know what the in depth of that is, then turn the fucking page and listen to everything that we just said. But let's talk about December. So, schedule for December, which I'm pulling up right now in my only post on the site. Today is clearly Super Tool Shed. Well, yesterday was Super Tool Shed, because right now it's 12 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, making it December 17th. So sorry for East Coast people. Nuts and bolts for Angel Cop, which you guys picked. So thank you very much. We'll prompt you to pick the next one. Violence Jack, which we're never going to talk about ever again. December 23rd is a surprise. Nuts and Bolts Anime Abandoned. This one I actually do want to talk about. On Christmas Day, we're going to release a Nuts and Bolts called Anime Abandoned, which is really the writing of Anime Abandoned.
We, during the, while Mark was here, we recorded our writing session. I had written two scripts. One you've already had, you've already seen. That was the, top 20 greatest Giants robots list, and another script for something that is yet to be released, and it's just us going through and trying to punch it up as best we can. You'll get to see the sort of thought process of how we chase an idea and how it winds up into reality.
And it's going to be roughly an hour long, so prepare yourselves for that. The following 2 days following is Nuts and Bolts Violence Check Part 1. Now, the reason why it is that we're splitting this into two parts is because technically it is two parts. There's going to be two Nuts and Bolts for Violence Check. One is a blog that we recorded after day one. Completely fucking wrecked after a day of filming. And the Violence Check Part 2 is going to be the legit commentary of Nuts and Bolts. Now, what this means for suggesting more Nuts and Bolts is not that, oh, well, we're just going to be ignoring suggestions for Nuts and Bolts for a while. We still want you to suggest other episodes for us to do Nuts and Bolts for, to which we will do those in tandem with Violence Jack Part 2 in the month of January. So keep doing what you do, because we do appreciate that. And once we hit January, we've got 3 episodes coming up, I think.
Yeah, we got 3 episodes coming out. It's going to be, we're going to take a, not, I wouldn't say a step back, but just like, you know, ease up on the throttle after the month we've had. So don't think, it's not going to be like a special effects extravaganza.
No, it's like not. That. There's going to be nothing epic about it, but it'll be nice. After December, we need some nice. Because we've seen a few comments that said, like, can you please just get back to doing stupid shit? And you know what? You're right. This quarter, we have not had nearly enough stupid shit. Like, Apocalypse Zero doesn't fucking count.
Because that was disgusting stupid shit.
Yeah, so we need some vintage anime abandon. And we recognize that. And that's what January is going to be. Subsequently, so is February, but February is going to be kind of an experimental month, but not in the normal way that we've been experimenting in the last quarter. It's going to be something, actually, that we feel is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And then March is Marcross, of course, and after that, it's the fucking Wild West. We have no idea what we're doing yet.
But, I can't wait to see this month close out, not just because of Christmas.
I hate you.
Oh, you know, you keep saying stuff like that. I'm not inclined to send you my Christmas gift.
See, I'm not a Christmas person. I haven't been a Christmas person for very many years. And meanwhile, Bennett is just filled with Christmas spirit. He's got peppermint coming out of his fucking eyes. He shits fucking gingerbread. And I'm just like, you know, dude, like, I'll give you presents for Christmas, but I'm just not... No tree, no lights, no fucking big Christmas dinner with the family. Like, it's just me on Christmas. And you know what I do on Christmas? I fucking sleep until the Doctor Who special comes on. That's what I do.
When we move in together, you're going to live in a house with Christmas.
And I will lock myself in my room. That's what I'm going to do.
You're going to lock yourself in your room, but you won't be able to escape the Christmas spirit.
Yeah, I will. With a gun. Be like, you take that Christmas and you send it right the fuck back downstairs.
That's, you say that, but when we're going caroling, your heart will melt and the Christmas spirit will shine through.
Oh my God, I'm closing this episode. I hate you so much. Oh my God, fucking Christmas. All right, so yes, happy holidays, everybody. We hope that you have a very good new year. Outro music is always by Zero Reynolds. You can follow him on Twitter at Zerjester. That's XERJester. You can now take Super Toolshed wherever you go. Just go to bendthesage.com/supertoolshed. For Ben the Sage, I'm Mark the Engineer. Until next we beat, the shed is shut.